Welcome to the Retired Excited Podcast. Retired Excited, the show where we give retired and want to be retired folk a look at how great retired life can be. Here we talk to men and women who are happily retired and loving their life. We explore the techniques, activities, beliefs, and excitement of these happy retirees and examine how every Tom, Dick, and Mary can benefit from their experience.
Here is your host, Henry Shapiro.
Hey folks, Henry here at Retired Excited, the show providing inspiration for people who are nearly retired, newly retired, or say they're never going to retire. Here we talk to retired people doing things that make them happy, from stamp collecting to cruising, from dancing to touring the world on a motorbike. There's an exciting stage of life to be enjoyed after full-time work, and it's got nothing to do with your financial situation or social position. We talk to everyday retired people who are living the life they want, and we talk to a few professionals to get expert advice. And I chip in with some of my own experiences. Hi folks, it's Henry here with episode number 37 of Retired Excited. It's not often that anyone maintains a hobby for over 60 years. Really, there's not many hobbies that can maintain your interest for over 60 years. Today's guest, Rao Wynn, has constructed and flown model aeroplanes since he was 8 years old, and the passion still burns bright as ever. How do I know? I went to school with him in the seventh grade. In this episode, we talk about the hobby or sport of model aeroplanes, but I spent some time initially talking about Rao's pathway to retirement. Rao was a very senior executive with Telstra, and you're going to recognise why he held that position as soon as we get into the discussion. Here's a little clue. He planned his retirement 10 years in advance. More particularly about aero modelling, Rao describes the various aspects of the sport, his love of building and flying the aircraft, and the satisfaction of flying a plane that you've built yourself. We go into the technology involved in model planes and the costs to get started, the benefits, and he says it's an activity that is ideal for people who are retired or wanting to retire. There's a lot more to say about model aircraft, and I'll catch you up at the other end of this interview with some of the links to clubs and so forth. But first, let's hear from Rao. I think you're going to really enjoy this interview. Good morning or afternoon, Rao. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Listeners, I have known Rao for a very long time. We went to school together when we were about 13 or 14 years old, and now we're very old. So it's been, I don't know, 50-something years that we've known each other. Does that sound right, Rao?
It does indeed, and it's been a very pleasant association.
I met Rao here in Australia, then he moved to Britain, then he came back to Australia for a while, and now he's in England again. Are you a retired person?
I prefer the term leisured.
You're a very lucky man. Tell us what you were doing before you retired.
I've yet to retire, as I tried to explain.
Oh, before you were leisured, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think it's important for the purposes of the record that we explain that in my last full-time paid salaried employment, I worked for a company called Telstra. There were several of us approaching retirement, and by that I mean in the coming 10 years, we were anticipating retirement. And we used to meet up every year, many of us coming from around Australia to get together every year. And we challenged ourselves to find an alternative to the term retired, which was not an agreeable concept. So we came up with the term leisured. And one of the more erudite members of the group said, well, the reason for that is because Socrates defined the term of the purpose of work as, I've forgotten. He defined that.
This was turning out to be a great story. Tell the punchline.
The object of work is leisure. And so we thought, as we were trying to pump up our superannuation and stuff, that we were working towards leisure, not retirement. And so I worked for Telstra in the mobiles business, and I spent the last 10 years of my life working as a contractor and consultant in that area, still working for Telstra some of that time.
Well, the word leisure sort of leads me into, segues into this story. When you were working, what did you dream about that you were going to do when you stopped working?
I didn't. I'm lucky enough to have a superb marriage, and I dreamed, I suppose, if of anything, of having more time with Parvin, less time on the treadmill. That 10 years I referred to was actually a phase in, because I actually, for most of that 10 years, I worked an average of 3 days a week. That was a very important transitional period from my point of view. I also worked without the full executive responsibility. So, you know, all the bullshit associated with managing people and all that stuff went out the window. And I was actually able to do the things I was frankly quite good at, and strategic marketing and what have you, guiding others without having to have the line management executive responsibility. And so from that point of view, I was halfway to retirement for my last 10 years.
It sounds perfect, because not many people have a transition. As you can imagine, when people, you know, they're working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and then it's a shock. So you were fortunate to be able to transition out, as you say.
Well, it was also, Henry, a transition in terms of I had significant status and power, if you like, in my employed role. And I remember that when I finally convinced Telstra I was going, they were concerned to not lose me. And so whereas I was fed up with 6, sometimes 7 days a week of aggro, I said I'd rather have none rather than be carried out in a box. And finally, and stupidly from a Telstra point of view, they said, well, we'd still like some of you. So I ended up with a couple of years of work at Telstra at 3 days a week, where I would have accepted 5, but I had 3 days a week and paid the same as I was for my full-time job.
What a perfect situation.
But interestingly, they tried it as an experiment and said, look, we don't know how it's going to work out. And they weren't that honest or open with me at the time. And they were concerned that having been strutting the stuff around the building, that maybe I wouldn't adapt to the idea of not having the power and authority that came with that role. And I was pleased to discover, and it's important to that transition, I was pleased to discover that because I was still able to exercise the skills that I had and actually do more of it in program design and things like that, that I actually made that transition very successfully from their point of view as well as mine. So I'd already, if you like, psychologically disengaged or downsized from that, you know, top of the tree type role during that period of 10 years.
Did you set the day or the date when you were going to finally leave, or was that part of a contract, or how did that work?
Well, two things about it. First of all, the day I left Telstra was by negotiation, but at my initiation. Following that was a series. I mean, I worked for Telstra and Optus and eBay, Orange, and, you know, so people in the telco world. It was a varied role right through for that 10 years. And frankly, what really set the boundaries was the planned move back to England. That had a date from 10 years beforehand. We'd said we've got to go back to be with my in-laws, having come back to Australia to be with my family. And so from that point of view, there was always a defined map in milestone terms. And I worked up until we came back to England. And England was such a big move. It meant the transition to a full retirement was actually overtaken by other events.
I've carried on with this a little bit longer than I normally would, because this is interesting. You had, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm just going to summarise this a little bit. You had a full-time position, and then you transitioned that into a part-time, not line management position.
Yes.
And then you gave that away and became an independent contractor, I could say, or self-employed, working for, as you said, Orange and eBay and various other ones. And so that's quite a, I don't even know how to describe that. It's a very, very good easing out of the workforce. And I was going to ask you if you were looking forward to finally giving all that away. But in fact, what happened was you gave it away because you were going back to England to look after the in-laws. So the transition worked very well in the end. Now I'd better talk to you about what I really wanted to talk to you about. And that is the hobby that you've had for a long time and that you continue now in your final leisured period. It's a bit hard to describe. Leisure doesn't work into a sentence all that well, but okay, I'll go with it. So from being a young person till now, you've been involved in aeromodelling, making model aeroplanes. So the question is, what started you? When you were a youngster, what started you into model aeroplanes?
My cousin, who's a year younger than me. Here I am at the age of 8. I can't remember a conversation or what have you, but I do remember with John buying a sheet of balsa and started to cut it into strips, the strips from which we made into a box-type fuselage, and covered it in kitchen wrap and painted it with house paint, and guess what? It didn't fly. That's where it started. And one of the reasons for that is that my family and my father's sister and his parents, and we used to meet up on Friday nights. And as the young kids in the family, we left to go and, amuse ourselves whilst the parents talk politics or whatever. And so John and I were stuck with having to amuse ourselves. And so the project was born out of boredom.
I'm going to come back to your personal aeromodelling, but I just want to, I'd like you to explain to the listeners the various aspects. There's different aspects to aeromodelling, and for instance, it might have a motor in it, it might be a glider. Can you just go through the various aspects? And I know that it's changed over the years. Perhaps you could talk a little bit about that as well.
What I'd like to say is, as a lead-in, to say that the real attraction to me for aeromodelling is not a passionate interest in full-size planes or the war history of bombers and biplanes and all that stuff. It was just the practical stuff associated with it's a creative process, it's a problem-solving process, and it has a very endearing feature for those of us who are leisured, and that is it's something you can do indoors and outdoors, summertime, wintertime. So it's not like golf, for example, where you really depend on the weather to get some enjoyment. It's certainly not something that's only like stamp collecting where you do it indoors and watch the mail for collecting stamps or whatever. It is really very diverse, the range of things you can do, which I'll come on to now, but also where you can, how you can do them. And there's a large aeromodelling fraternity right around the world, and I do mean all around the world, not just Anglo-Saxon or Western world. And so there's a lot of stuff happening all the time, with technology now making a great impact. That technology leads me to indoor flying as a starting point because, and you'll imagine this is true in England where the weather gets a bit difficult. And so during the winter months, you can meet up and fly in a local village hall or a badminton court or something bigger. That's achieved with little model helicopters or, frankly, free flight, rubber-powered models which have no radio control and which you build and are typically going to weigh a gram or something, which is a bit hard to do, and they're flown free flight in halls. So you can do it all seasons, venues inside and outside. I'm not sure that there's much else I can say other than that, as you rightly said, you can have gliders which have no power at all, just like full size. Gliders with no power. You can have the same glider with an electric motor up the front, which powers it to height where the motor switched off and then it glides. You can have pretty much everything that you see in the full-size world as a modeled version, including jets and certainly including ducted fan type things. So it looks jet-like. And then you can go and fly them off the edge of cliffs, where you get good updrafts, and that those updrafts will keep the model aloft. People will know, if they're of my vintage, will know of people flying control line models and things which were typically around in my youth. There's huge variety of model types and of technologies involved, and nobody ever pursues them all.
When I was young, we used to fly control line aeroplanes. That is to say, the plane was on the end of a couple of long wires. Used to go round and round. You used to get very, very dizzy. And they used to have little petrol motors, or rather diesel motors, which you started by flicking the propeller. And if you weren't careful, it would flick, start, come around and hit you in the back of the fingers and either cut you or hurt you. But they don't do that anymore, do they? Or do they still have those little diesel motors?
Henry, very much so, because there are, let me put people into two groups as era modelers. There are those that are nostalgic and who are still trying to recreate the models of their youth, and that'll include those little diesels and free flight or radio control models that they're powering. But at the other end, you have now large motors. By large, I mean, you know, could be 100cc multi-cylinder motors, and they're not started by flicking particularly. they'll be like...
That's just about what you've got on your chainsaw. That's a
yeah,
big
exactly.
motor.
And yeah, exactly. And so there'll be electric starters to start those. But electric motors, as distinct from petrol motors, growing in popularity, and they have advantages like you don't get oil covered in oil, you just throw a switch to start them, and they are becoming more and more powerful. You're seeing those taking the place of petrol motors in a lot of models.
I guess the advent of the electric motors is really because of the improvement now in batteries and battery life, battery power.
Absolutely.
Now, can anyone be an aero modeler?
Well, I could self-reference here saying you have to be tall, extremely good-looking, but that would be a lie. Anybody can. What I find now is that it's interesting is that you will get major growth in the participants of aero modelling amongst those who are anticipating retirement or are in retirement, and you will get those often being the case that they had built or messed around with model planes, particularly, you know, rubber-powered model planes in their childhood or early teenage years. And so there's a touch of, oh, I'd like to go back and give that a go again. There are very few aero modelers who have been right through their adult life aero modeling. They tend to be overtaken by girls, marriage, children, all that stuff, and come back to aero modeling. But you occasionally, there's a second group that comes into it looking around for something to do to fill those hours when they discover the wife's not happy to see them at home. And I say the wife because there are, like, I'm in a club with 200 members. There are two female members of the club. So it's a very male-dominated activity. So those people will come to it when they become empty nesters or whatever, and looking, they've got a bit of time and they're looking for something to occupy them.
Sorry, just to break in on you, why do you think that is, that it's so heavily male-dominated?
I think it's the type of toy, particularly these days where you can buy so many ready-to-fly or, you know, nearly ready-to-fly models. You find that spending the money on this toy that you go out and potentially break and have to dedicate a bit of time to learning to fly, and joining a club is the only practical way of doing that. It may be self-fulfilling in the sense that if a woman comes along and sees a whole group of guys, what's the attraction for her? And it might be the subject matter itself. I mean, if you go along to, and there's lots of it in Britain, flying days with full-size planes, you'll find that the attendance there is 80% men. So I think it's just that, you know, aircraft generally are more male-oriented in appeal.
So really anyone can do it. Very few women do, but anyone could. Do you need special skills to be able to build and fly model aeroplanes?
Hand-eye coordination would help, and I'm only working on the basis that I believe that to be true because I don't have any of that. You can struggle along without it, but, boy, it would make a difference if I had some. Reasonable eyesight. And I say that because I see some people getting into it whose flying activities, model flying activities, become limited over time because of their eyesight. But that particularly applies in my area because I like flying gliders, and gliders will be up and away up in the clouds or what have you. And without reasonable eyesight, that becomes very difficult. Obviously, with control line, for example, you've got a pretty good idea where the model is.
On the other end of the wire.
The wire, that's right, yes. Now, hang on, I need to add something, Henry. Mm-hmm. This indoor flying to which I referred earlier with little helicopters and stuff, and by that I mean a helicopter that's a maybe 10-inch rotor span, I go to an activity that's about every fortnight during the winter months with some friends. I started doing it alone. I now have, there's a group of six of us that all go, and three of the six are women. So it's husbands and wives, and Parvin, my wife, is one of them, and they love it.
They fly. They have their own machine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they fly. Now, and they fly in, you know, every bit as well and with every bit as much enthusiasm as the guys.
That's interesting, isn't it? The indoor flight tends to attract women, and it may be because they can do it with their partner. Whether it be the indoor or outdoor, are there competitions involved? Is this a competitive sport?
It can be. There's a whole history of competition in aeromodelling, but most aeromodellers will stay well clear of that stuff. So it's purely recreational enjoyment. In the indoor thing to which I refer, that's entirely enjoyment. I mean, you know, we all come together, we know each other, have a chat, have a cup of tea, all that stuff. So the social side of it is reinforcing strongly the flying bit.
So there is competition. For those people who are in competition, is it really fierce competition or is it more fun?
Depends on the personality, depends on the particular model type. But at an international level, it's fierce. At a national level, you get people who know each other and maybe fly together through the year in build-up competitions. There'll be elimination finals across regions and everything else. So people have to live with each other through the year. But the competition itself is fierce in the sense of people designing and building their own models, refining them through the year.
All right, let's talk about what you do. You are interested in gliders. I know that they're radio-controlled gliders, and you also have gliders which have electric motors on them, so you don't need a tow plane or some method for getting them up in the air. You can just launch them and away they go, and then you turn off the electric power. What is it about the flying that you like? What thrill do you get out of flying the plane?
I think my enjoyment of some people like to call it a sport, I still call it a hobby, but my enjoyment of the hobby is 60% the building and 40% flying. Okay. Mm-hmm. And building covers the diversity of getting a model ready to fly and solving problems or repairs or whatever. So it's not all balsa bashing, as you might call it, by any means. But the flying side for me, actually, when I returned to Melbourne and I went looking for a club somewhere near home with a decent field where you could fly 7 days a week, I found a club called Varms in middle suburbs of Melbourne. It was a glider club with about 200 members, and I'd never been anywhere near gliders before. You know, when you buy an aeromodelling magazine, you read the bits that interest you and you ignore the others. Well, the glider bit I ignored. But I became fascinated by it. And the reason for the glider fascination was, after having learnt to fly enough to be able to enjoy it at all, was because it brought another dimension into your outdoor activity. And that was having to read the air and having to pay attention to the weather in ways that were much more essential, because you're looking for thermals. These are rising currents of warm air, and which will help to keep the glider aloft. This added another dimension that was missing from just flying around within a few hundred feet of you in a field. And so I thoroughly enjoyed that, and it became another challenge on top of the challenge of keeping the model, you know, in one piece and flying it. But the general thing is, people, if you build it and then you go and fly it and you sort out the problems, there's a sense of achievement. Aeromodelling's got lots of problem-solving opportunities. I don't mean to exaggerate that, but it is just a series, whether you're building or flying, it's problem-solving.
Give us an example, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, if you're flying the model and it seems to be not flying in a straight line, this is hands-off without radio control, not flying in a straight line but turning to the right or whatever, you have to work out why is it doing that. And what's the best way of counteracting that to get it to fly straight?
If I talk now about the building side of it, I remember in the old days, that makes me sound old, doesn't it? In the old days, you used to build up out of balsa wood, and typically you'd go and fly and you'd take a garbage bag with you. Because when a balsa wood plane hits the ground, you're left with lots of little bits. Mm. I'm not talking about in your case, Raoul, because I know you're a very good pilot. But these days, planes are made of different stuff. Mm. So just tell the listeners about the more modern planes.
when I first met Parvin and I was off to choose a new car, I was in a company car situation which said I could choose my own car. So I went off to the motor show to choose a car, and I kept looking at hatchbacks and estate cars, as they're called in England, or station wagons, as we call them in Australia. And Parvin was saying, why don't you get a sedan? And I explained that, look, the aeromodelling thing, it requires, you know, that I can put the model in the back and stuff. And her acerbic comment was, well, you're always bringing them home in a bin liner. Why don't you just get a sedan? You can put the bin liner, the black bag, in the boot, which was not a very charitable start to our relationship. But you were right about the black bag. But the material side, balsa is still supreme. Balsa and plywood are still supreme. Okay. So although you can still buy models, or you can buy models now that are ready made, often they'll have balsa and plywood as their key components. But there's also one other material that is probably now overtaken balsa as being the most volume of models built, and that's foam. And you get the most beautiful models, be they gliders or biplanes or whatever, small, medium and large, built from foam. And these just give you a complete wing or a fuselage or whatever, pretty much ready to fly with all the gear installed. It gets you into the air quickly. They are comparatively cheap. In many cases, you can buy ready-to-fly models at less cost than the materials would cost you if you were to try and build one yourself.
I was going to ask you about the cost, and that's going to be a little bit difficult given that I don't know if you remember what the cost would be in Australia, but for someone who wants to get into this hobby, is it an expensive hobby to start with?
It depends what you start with. Most young kids who come into it want something flash, and so they often see they don't have the patience for having to go through the learning phases. In the aeromodelling world, what you learn to fly on will be something that looks more like a Cessna Cub or something, high wing cabin model that's inherently stable, or a glider for that matter. So if you started at that end, so let me cover it. You'd also have to make a decision as to whether you're buying all that you need to fly this model, or whether you are buying something that's a bit more future-proof, in other words, being suitable for maybe the next 10 models rather than just the one you start with. But you can now do two things. First of all, you can go to clubs, and most clubs now will have trainer models and trainer facilities so that you can actually get going and establish whether it's for you or not, without putting your hand in your pocket at all.
Okay, really? So that's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, Varms, which I mentioned earlier on, you can do that. They have trainer gliders, training days, and all the rest of it, and you don't need anything. Now, that's not the right way to do it longer term, of course, but it's enough for you to have half a dozen sessions and say, hey, I'm getting the hang of this. I really enjoy it. So you can do it without having to buy a model at all to get going. The next thing you can do is you can buy a model that is so close to ready to fly, it might take 5 hours of work before you put it into the air, which, of course, you should do with the guidance of somebody who knows what they're doing. But in that case, you could buy something ready to fly for about $300 to $400.
Are we talking about including the radio control gear in that?
Yes.
So that's, it's not a little money, but it's not extraordinary. If you compare that with what people would buy, you know, golf clubs or something for, that's fair enough. Now, you said 5 hours of work, and you said that as though that was very little. If you're building up the plane yourself, typically, and I know this is a very difficult because how long's a bit of string, but typically how many hours might you spend building a plane, building a glider?
What I find, along with my fellow leisured club members, is that as we get older, it takes longer.
Right. Doesn't everything? Yes.
It's interesting that, because there are people that talk about, gee, I thought when I got to retirement and stuff, I'd be able to build all these planes. And I'm now finding that I take a year or two to build a model that I would build in a month or two when I was working.
That's because they're not focusing on, are they?
It depends where the enjoyment is. If you're purely industrious to get a model into the air, then you could probably build a model in 40 hours. Now, I don't mean a beautiful replica scale complex model for which it could be 5,000 hours. But I do mean that you could put a model into the air starting from a kit which has got all pre-cut components which you assemble and all the rest of it. But I would think you'd be talking about more like 100 hours. The trick is, and I've been lucky enough to make the transition, and Henry, you will remember in our youth where you had the one model, you went out and you smashed it up, and that took you away from flying for, a couple of months whilst you tried to repair or replace it. Mm. Now I have 28 models that are ready to fly at an hour's notice, and that excludes the indoor models, of which I have another half dozen. The thing is that if I go out flying and I smash something, and I'll come back to that in a second, but if I go out and I have, a setback like that, then I've got something else to fly. Given that when you're building a new model, you're not under the pressure of getting this bloody thing into the air and being, because I can tell you, when you're repairing a model and you've got nothing to fly, the flying weather is perfect. And I think that it depends in part. You're having a cup of tea and you're plodding along, you're solving problems and stuff. And I do take a lot longer than I need to do the building or repairing or whatever it is. And principally it's because of, aging, but also because of having other things to fly. I'm never short of things to fly, so there's not that pressure. But I think that if you were a teenager working with dad or whatever, there's a magic thought, isn't it, a teenager working with dad? Or if you're dad, I think I'd allow at least 40 hours and possibly 100. But you start by buying a ready-to-fly model and then buying another ready-to-fly model. And then in the background, you do your first building of a model.
We really need to wind up, but there's a couple of other things. So someone's coming up to retirement and they're looking for something to do. Would you recommend this to folks?
I think if there's an interest there, if it is, I'd recommend it highly as a sport. And the reason for that is in part because I've said it's inside, outside, daytime, nighttime. I see many members of the club, of which I'm now a member, well into their 80s, still thoroughly enjoying it. So it's future-proof in that sense. Obviously, if you lose some level of manual dexterity or lose your eyesight or whatever, different story. But we've got disabled people in the club. We've got people well into their 80s in the club, flying, participating, enjoying. And so it has a future.
That brings me to the second last question, which is, and you've mentioned the club a number of times, or clubs. Raoul, what is it about being in a club that you enjoy? You've mentioned the club many times. What is it about being in the club that you like?
I'll take it back to the early part of our conversation. Having had some fairly high-powered roles and what have you, and having been seen as being competent and successful, I found it certainly a relief to go and join a different social structure which had quite different hierarchy. This is in the mid-80s. I joined a club, and here I am strutting my stuff as a senior exec and all the rest of it, and the most competent aeromodeler was a man named Tony, who was a long-distance truck driver. He was overwhelmingly the best in the club. It was always, I felt, healthy for me to be joining into something that wasn't hierarchical in the big business world that I knew. Secondly, I'm not a good aeromodeler in the sense of being a craftsman or in the sense of being a good flyer. So it was salutary for me to be there and to be humbled at times by, not publicly, but by the fact that there were people with high orders of skill that I didn't have but could admire and partially understand. That's what you get in a club. You get that diversity, which will be quite different from what you probably get in your normal daytime job. My current club, we've got a couple of aeronautical engineers, many other different sorts of engineers, a research scientist, but we've got a bus driver and so forth. But, there's 200 people in the club, so I can't go through them all. But I'm saying that diversity is great. And you've got people that have been aeromodeling since their youth, and you've got people who've only come into it in their retirement years. It is the diversity, the shared interest. We get together every Friday for a meeting we call prayers. And we go to prayers every Friday, which is a meeting where we chin wag and have cups of coffee and all the rest of it, all lunch and so forth, without the need to fly. And so the concept of prayers came up where we were praying for good weather, and we got together. Now when there's good weather, we're still together, having a chin wag. Companionship, shared interest, and it's there in heaps. And there are lots of air modelling clubs around. There's 800 and something in Britain. There's 300 and something in Australia.
So then finally, and having nothing to do with aeromodelling or having everything to do with aeromodelling, what advice would you give to people who are facing retirement and wondering what it's all about and how they're going to live out the later part, the later third, let's say, of their life?
I don't know whether planning's too grand a term, but I'd start anticipating 10 years beforehand, and I'd make the transition to retirement well before you cease work. You've got to get to the point where work is an interruption to the real purpose of life.
Yes. Well, now that's an interesting concept, the real purpose of life. Just expand on that a little bit.
The object of work is leisure.
I've spoken to many people with these interviews, and purpose rears its head quite often, that when you retire, you need some purpose. You can't. Yes. You just don't go into the void, let's say. You need something, some reason for getting you up in the morning. And in your case, it may be aeromodelling. Mm. It may be looking after in-laws. Could yes. be all sorts of things. Raoul, this has been a really interesting discussion because I've learned stuff. And I think the listeners have learned things as well. Aeromodelling sounds like a really perfect endeavour for folks because there's the manual dexterity part of it. There's the building part of it. There's the being out in the open air part of it and community or friendship part of it as well. So thank you very much. You've given us lots to think about and good flying.
Thank you, Henry.
Well, as you can see, Raoul loves his hobby. And why wouldn't he? As he said, it's something that can be done in winter, in summer, inside, outside. And although the outside sport is mainly dominated by the male of the species, he's found that indoor flying can be an excellent activity for himself and his wife and his friends, and lots of women are involved in that part of the sport. Now, model aeroplanes range just from simple free-flight gliders to control line planes, and there's all sorts of control line planes operated by little motors, whether they be diesel motors or little electric motors. And then there's radio control planes, and the radio control planes have got a vast array of types. There's replicas of actual airliners and replicas of four-engine warplanes that fly. They have undercarriage that lifts. The whole works. Rudder, elevator, ailerons, the lot. If you want to get some idea of the range, have a look at the Facebook page of the Model Aeronautical Association of Australia, the MAAA. I've put a link to that in the show notes so you can have a quick look. During our discussion, Raoul mentioned VARMS. That's the club that he was associated with when he was here in Melbourne, and that is the Victorian Association of Radio Model Soaring. It's a club which specialises in gliders, in all sorts of gliders. And as he said, if you want to just have a look at the sport and try it out, well, you can go down there and they'll give you a go. They'll let you use one of their trainer planes, and you can see if it's something that you could become interested in. VARMS has got a website, which is varms.org.au, and that also is in the show notes. I thought it would be interesting to post you a YouTube link. It shows an astoundingly inexpensive, in my opinion anyhow, little plane, which you can buy right off the shelf, that's got technology that you would think would be hugely expensive. It shows somebody demonstrating this little plane. It's only about, oh, I suppose, 300 mil or a foot across the wingspan. It's radio controlled. It's got a battery driven motor. But what is amazing about it is that it's got a whole lot of panic features. So if all of a sudden you're getting a bit out of control, it's a plane that you would use for training. If you're getting a bit out of control, press the button and it rights itself. Or if it's starting to fly out of its radio range, it automatically comes back to you. And if really you've lost control and you don't quite know what to do, there's a sequence so it will land itself automatically. And you think, oh, this is going to be hundreds of dollars. No, it isn't. Around about $170 US, $170 US. And you can find it on Amazon. Once again, I've put the link in the show notes. So as you can see, I'm really impressed with aero modeling as a hobby. It's something you can do right through your life. And as Raoul said, there's people in his club well into their 80s who are still enjoying the comradeship of the club and the membership and being able to fly as well. So leave me a comment in the reply box. Don't forget to click the share button at the bottom of the page. And I look forward to talking to you next week. Peace, health, happiness. See you next week.
I like that. I'm going to give that a go for sure.
Ian Robert.
That's terrific.
That was interesting. What a good idea.